Hello, and welcome to the Comic Book Page Weekly Spotlight. My name is John Mayo, and I'll be your host.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting three comics that came out in shops last week, but that John and I got from DCBS this week. One from DC, one from Marvel, and one from some other publisher. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
The items we're discussing in this episode were released on September 26th, 2007. I had 34 comics and one trade this week, so it was a little bit bigger than average week. Certainly a somewhat expensive week, because I also got hit for the bags and the boards and the weekly shipping for DCBS, so it was better part of $100 for me after discount.
Yeah, it's interesting how we kind of jump back and forth on who has more in a week. Last week I had more than you, and this week you had more than me. I only had 29 comics and two hardcovers. I got the Girl Genius hardcover, which really isn't a trade because that is originally printed in that hardcover version. It's on the web now. Mm-hmm. They stopped having a comic a while back. And then I got the Avengers Defenders War hardcover.
Cool.
So, I want to leap into it. This week we're going to start with Batman 669, but I think we're really doing 667 through 669, which is that Island of Mr. Mayhew Batman Club storyline.
The Club of Heroes. Yeah, I really enjoyed this. I like how they were able to take a storyline from the past, which in modern light seems, you know, somewhat ridiculous, and really turn it into a really interesting storyline. Bring these characters, you know, firmly into the continuity and do some fun stuff with them.
Yeah, I agree.
A few of these we'd seen in JLA Classified, but a lot of these really I don't think have been seen since the original story back in the day.
Right.
This just seems like a clear case where, you know, a talented writer like Grant Morrison can take something that seems just completely ridiculous or derivative, because, I mean, these are all Batman clones, and some of them were, you know, at the time, very much one-note characters, can develop them and can really enrich the DC universe in the process.
He did a really good job of that. I think that, in general, the one main comment I have about the storyline is, while I really enjoyed it, there were enough, and he's a very craftful writer, there were enough little points that were woven into each storyline that built on something from before, that as I was reading this latest issue here, 669, I had to go back and get 667 and 668 and relook at them in order to really kind of figure out where I was at, how that mystery was going on. So it kind of wasn't, as a standalone issue, not the greatest standalone issue in the world, because there was just so much that it built on, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. What it means is that, you know, you need to have a good memory. If I just read Batman, I'm sure I wouldn't have that problem, but I read so many other things that I had to go back and really get myself back up to speed on it.
Yeah, I think this worked, because I didn't do that, and, you know, now that you mention it, I probably should have. And what I mean by that is it worked fine just as the one issue for me, but I agree, there's a lot more that you can get out of it if you read the entire storyline at once. I didn't feel lost in this, but there were a few where it's like, okay, now where were these characters again? And I had to kind of remember. And I got enough in this issue to fill me in on what I had to remember. But I'm sure I lost out on some of the subtleties and maybe some of the full impact I could have gotten if I, like I said, read all three back to back.
Right. To clarify, I mean, I wasn't lost per se in this issue. I mean, I could have read through it, but it was more that I knew there was something that I wasn't remembering.
Yeah.
And that would have enriched the story for me. So I went back, and instead of just plowing through it, I kind of went back because, frankly, I kind of held these issues aside because after I read the first issue, I knew that was going to be the case, so I didn't really put these issues away. I kind of left them out on my shelf here, and I've been holding them so I could have easy access to them. Now that I've read the whole storyline, I can merge them into the larger thing. So,
well, and I think you used the right term there of enriching the story. It's a very satisfying story, regardless.
Right.
But doing it all in one pass definitely does enrich it. And part of it is there's so many characters and there's so much cool stuff going on.
Right.
Definitely a thumbs up. Do you think we're going to see many of these characters anytime soon? Or just kind of pull them out, dust them off, tell a story, and put them back in the closet?
I don't get the feeling that, well, yeah. I mean, some of them you're obviously not going to see again because of events that happened in the story. But I don't know. It seems like some of them are played in such a way that there was very interesting twists built by Grant Morrison for them, and I'm not sure that Grant is usually in the habit of going back and building on things like that. He tends to grow all kinds of things like that in many of the stories he writes, and then he doesn't go back and do anything with them again, because that's just not, it doesn't seem to be the kind of writer he is. You know, he develops this tapestry and then he moves on to the next thing because he likes to do that. But I think there's a lot of fodder here for stories that other writers could pick up on.
Well, I mean, like Squire would be interesting to see show up in Robin down the line, or Titans, or somewhere else. I mean, there's a lot of things for other writers to pick up on.
True.
And that's kind of what I like when somebody takes
right
older material in the archives and the library for these companies and dusts them off, polishes them up, and puts them in a new light to where they're now potentially much more viable than they had been prior to the story. I just think that's cool. Shall we move on to Iron Man 22?
Sure.
Now, I read a ton of comics, just like you do. And for me, comics fall into kind of three categories. Those I like, those I dislike, and those kind of in the middle. And this is one squarely in the middle. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. But I read this earlier in the week, and when I was pulling it out this morning so we could talk about it, I couldn't really remember what happened in it. And it's a perfectly fine issue. You know, flipping through it, it's like, oh yeah, now I remember. It's like, yeah, that was interesting, that was okay. This just is kind of the epitome of a, I almost want to say, an average quality issue. And, you know, I'm not sure what it is about it that made it that way for me. It had a good story, it moved things along, it had some interesting developments, and like I said, it wasn't bad at all, but it certainly didn't stand out from the crowd. What were your thoughts on it?
I think that you make a good assessment. I hadn't thought of it that way on the, you know, you really like them, you really hate them, and then some are just kind of meandering there in the middle. This certainly fell that way for me, too. I liked a lot of elements of the story. I mean, it was back to, Tony's been such an ass lately in Civil War and everything that I have conflicted emotions about him when I'm reading a story with him. I liked him in this issue. They had some lighthearted moments in it. You know, there was some comedic stuff with that. What's that doofus superhero in Omaha?
Oh, Captain Ultra or Captain Hero?
Yeah, Captain Ultra. And, you know, just Tony's interaction with him. There was the mystery that they set up last episode or last issue with the Graviton and with the one hero being killed that they are solving in this issue. And it was kind of interesting. They kind of hit you in a way that I wasn't expecting, so that was good also. I just, in some respects, I kind of felt like I was missing something. Some of this stuff with, I think that's supposed to be the Mandarin.
Oh.
With the white hair.
Is that who that's supposed to be?
I think.
Interesting. I don't know.
Maybe not. I don't know who that is, but he's, you know, the sinister guy who's, you know, doing the stuff behind the scenes. I thought when they found the Mandarin gibbering in that institution in China that was what he looked like. He didn't look anything like the Mandarin had looked in you know, previous appearances. He had white hair and he had the, you know, long hair and everything. If you look on the page opposite the Mike Waringo ad.
Right.
I mean, I think that's who that's supposed to be, but I could be wrong.
I can see that. I didn't pick up on that at all. I'm not convinced it's the Mandarin, but certainly it's a viable theory.
And so send those emails and letters, people who are listening, if you have some remembrance or evidence one way or the other on who this guy with the white hair is in this issue, to theguys@comicbookpage.com, because I'm interested in knowing that for sure one way or the other.
Yeah, I'd appreciate that too.
But, you know, it's kind of like I was left at the end of this issue as like wanting more, but not in that wanting more in a good way.
Yeah.
You know, where you get to the end of an issue where I want some more and, ooh, I'm excited. This was like I was somehow left with the feeling that something was missing from this issue that should have been.
Well, and I think part of it goes back to the white-haired guy of, in this issue, he's never addressed by name, he's just kind of the big guy behind the scenes, and who is he and why should I care? And since I don't have any reason to care about him, it hurts those parts of the issue. The other thing that just drove me nuts, and it's a minor thing, but they're talking about how they want to wake up Graviton, but they're not going to be able to get a needle back in him to knock him back out. And I'm like, what, the guy doesn't breathe, they can't implant something in him? I mean, it just seemed kind of lame. So, that was one that just early in the issue, it's like, I had a problem with that, and again, the issue wasn't bad, but it never really raised above that kind of average mark, and, you know, it was kind of middle chapter.
Yeah, and I don't know, I might have missed some Graviton stuff somewhere along the line, but he's not acting that much like the Graviton that I remember, but... The Graviton stories that really stand out in my memory is back when he used to fight the Avengers.
Right.
And that was a long time ago. I certainly could be blanking out various Graviton stories that happened during the 90s and early 2000s where they drastically changed the character.
You know, a lot of my favorite stories with him, he was fighting the West Coast Avengers, the Thunderbolts, I think, at one point. And he was not a guy to be trifled with. You know, he wakes up in a hospital bed and, you know, Iron Man standing over him saying, you know, tell me about this or whatever. He's going to crumple him into a little ball and throw him halfway across the planet. This seemed out of character.
Well, I think what they're saying, though, is that he couldn't do that because they had him in some kind of a room with power dampeners that they had created. And that's why he couldn't do that. And that's also why they were worried about waking him up in the first place, was that they weren't sure that the power dampeners were going to work on somebody with the power level the Graviton has. So they acknowledged that.
Yeah, that's true.
And apparently the power dampeners do work, so that's something that, kind of like in the Powers universe.
Yeah.
You know, Bendis has that green light, you know, power dampener kind of thing. So I think they are making a nod to that. That he is very powerful, because they were worried about even letting him wake up and talk to him.
Yeah, but even that power shows through in his personality. He's a very forceful personality, and I didn't get that sense here. He almost seemed a bit meek and mild-mannered. But, I mean, overall, it was an okay issue. I certainly didn't hate it, but it just didn't really do anything for me.
Right. And on the personality thing, that's something that they're playing with, and maybe they're going to do something with that later, but it seemed like he's almost gone kind of nutso or something.
Yeah.
And that's why his personality is off. But again, that's not that clear. Maybe, you know, in summary, what my feeling of it was as I'm reading through this issue, there's just a lot of stuff that lacks clarity. And it's the storytelling in this issue. I think they're trying to go for a certain type of style. And Daniel and Charles Knauf, K-N-A-U-F, are the writer of this. I don't know what else they've ever done. But I think that they're just not doing a great job of that. And that's probably what's leaving me wanting in this issue. That
yeah.
I can see what they're trying to do, and it's just being done in a somewhat clumsy fashion as a writer. And it's leaving me as a reader kind of wanting just that little bit extra.
And it may not be that it's so much in a clumsy manner, so much as in a too subtle a manner. Perhaps if Iron Man was one of half a dozen books we were reading every month, we'd have a better recollection of what was going on in the previous issues, and we wouldn't have a problem with this. But for me, at least, this may be a matter of the writer assuming a much better recollection of the previous issues than I really have when I come to read it. I expect the writer to help get me back into the story, jog my memory on the stuff I need. And this is one that may read a hell of a lot better in trade.
I, for one, was very grateful that Marvel has these previously pages at the front of the book. Because if I wouldn't have had that previously page at the front of the book, I would have been really lost. Because that did remind me about some things that did go on before. So I will give them props for that, because that did help. I'm more thinking about just clarity of purpose in how they're talking, just how Graviton is acting.
Yeah, there's a lot of almost talking around issues and not putting some things in the forefront that need to be for better storytelling.
And that's what I'm talking about when I said clumsy, and maybe clumsy is not the right word, but I can see that they're trying to, you know, be mysterious and give certain clues now and hold certain things back, and it's just maybe a writer like, you know, some writer who does that a lot better would be picking a different set or a different spin on how to do that so that it didn't leave the reader feeling like something was missing.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that.
You want to go on to Brit number 2 from Image?
Yeah, Now, this is a series you're just getting into, correct? You've picked up some of the back issues?
Right. I first read it when you recommended that I take a look at it. I got number one a month ago, and then I went out to pick up the back issues because I loved number one, so I picked up the Brit one-shot that had come out quite some time ago, and then I picked up Brit Cold Death. There's only one other Brit appearance I haven't been able to track down yet, and that's Brit Red, White, Black, and Blue. So I had read all of that prior to this week, and then I got number two this week and read it, and we can go into that one now.
Yeah, I've been reading them since they came out. I love the character. I mean, the concept is simple. He's basically strong and indestructible, and he works for the government. So he gets sent out to go do stuff, and after the events of the first issue, somebody else has to kind of get used to take care of a few things. And this is kind of her story through this issue. And I don't think she's ever named anywhere in the issue. But we certainly learn a lot about her, and it's really kind of cool.
Right. I think they could have been a little clearer on who exactly she was. I mean, you kind of, the way she looks, I kind of made an assumption, but I don't know that that was really crucial to the telling of the story. They could have just come right out and said, I mean, I'm going to spoil it a little bit. I mean, it's just his sister, right?
Yeah.
And they could have been just a little bit more clear on, okay, this is Brit's sister.
Well, they do at one point where she's like, you know, referencing him as her brother.
Right, but that's a ways in.
Yeah, that's definitely a ways in, and we still don't get her name.
Right. This is another one. It's kind of like when we talked about Intergalactic last week. I think, and there's a lot of black space on the inside front cover of this issue.
Yeah.
I think having a little paragraph of kind of what has gone before or kind of setting a little bit of context would go a long way in this issue.
Well, it's funny because it's like how DC and Marvel would have that caption at the beginning of the comics of just the high-profile spin on what the title is. They'd list off the members of the Titans, say they used to be the sidekicks, they broke off, formed their own team, and bam, you know, that's the premise of the series. Just having that
right
for this series would be cool.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a very accessible second issue. It's a fun second issue. But I can see where people, it's like, well, yeah, but what's the concept? Now, the other thing that's interesting about this is clearly part of the Robert Kirkman universe. But because of his exclusive agreement over at Marvel, he can't write it. So he's kind of acting as editor on it. And he's picked a really good creative team for it because it very much feels like one of his books. It's very much, you know, in the keeping with the one-shots that Kirkman himself had written and the other Invincible and other things that are in this same Kirkman universe.
So I'm unfamiliar with the details. So did he, like, grandfather Walking Dead and Invincible into his Marvel contract because he was already doing those? And it's just, like, writing and creating something new is something that he can't do?
Pretty much. And some of this came out when he did Astounding Wolfman, because that was also in the contract. He had two or three things, I think, that he was planning on doing, and that was just part of the negotiating process. He certainly wasn't going to give up Walking Dead or Invincible. And he had Astounding Wolfman he wanted to do. At that point, Britt was more or less inactive, and I don't think he'd planned on doing it as a series, or at least obviously not one that he was going to write.
It feels like a Kirkman book. I mean, he's the Bruce Brown who's doing it, I think, does a good job. Cliff Rathburn on the art, it certainly has kind of the art feel of various other Kirkman books I've read, so it kind of feels good in that Kirkman-verse, I guess you could call it.
Yeah, if you like any of Kirkman's other things, particularly Invincible and even some of the stuff he's done over at Marvel with the superhero stuff, I think you'll very much enjoy this series. It's fun. It's cool.
Yeah, I like this issue a lot. I think that this is one you can jump on now. You get issue number two here. You can, I would imagine, pretty easily find issue number one on a rack at a comic shop somewhere still at cover price. Just start getting those.
Yeah.
And start reading the story. I mean, number one did a really good job of setting up who the character is, what the basic premise is, and how everything fits together. I read the number one issue of this series prior to having read any of the other Brit stuff that had come out written by Kirkman in previous years. And they did a really good job of setting it up, so I got right into it. In fact, I got into it to the point where it's like, cool, and I needed to go out and track down those other things.
Yeah, highly recommend it. I've enjoyed the character since it started. Kirkman is one that I would like to see kind of further develop his little corner of the Image universe, or his own little universe, whatever we want to call it, because he's got some really great ideas. He's doing some fun stuff, and he's shown with this that he can take other creators, kind of impart his vision, get them on board to take it as their own vision, and do some cool stuff that stays within the tone and style that we expect and enjoy.
Right. And just to point out, if you read, and you know, I was, you know, saying a minute ago that they could have put something on the inside of the front cover to kind of give, you know, what the deal is with this. They actually have that in that issue, you know, back where the letters page normally will be. There's a, I don't know, you call it an interview or a conversation between Robert Kirkman and Bruce Brown that has a lot of that information that you'd want to have, and you can go back and read that. So it's present in the issue. There's a lot of background on who Britt is, where Britt's coming from, where they want Britt to be going, how he fits in with things. But, you know, still, that's at the end of the issue. You kind of have to dig for it. You know, having just a little blurb up front would have probably been nice.
Well, yeah, again, inside front cover, they ought to do a quick sales pitch on what the concept of the book is. Now, you had another comic you wanted to discuss this week?
Yes. As listeners know, I kind of have this first issue challenge thing for the last year or so. I don't pre-order sight unseen every issue of a new comic. I will order the first issue, and, you know, typically 2, 3, or 4 issues get solicited before I ever read the first issue. And I was getting too many books where I'd get them, I'd read the first issue and say, oh, that wasn't that terribly good, and then I'd be stuck with, well, I already ordered 2 or 3 more issues, and now if I want to stop it, I'm going to get 2 or 3 issues that I don't necessarily want. So now I order the first issue. If I like that first issue, then I will retroactively order 2 and 3 and, you know, up to the current issue. One of those books that passed my first issue challenge with flying colors this week was Uncle Sam and the Freedom Fighters, written by Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray, with art by Renato Arlem. I read this book, this first issue, and it blew my doors off. I loved the first issue a lot, and just adding that book to my pull list is going to be a pleasure, because just as an example, they took the character of the Red Bee, and I never imagined that they could take the Red Bee and make it into a character where it's like, wow, what a cool character. But they did, and they did some really great stuff with the character in this issue that, John, I think you've got a good take on, you know, what they did with the character.
Well, it's funny, because I thought there were 3 good developments with the Red Bee. The whole how she handled the hive at the beginning, the revelation she's becoming more insect-like and she's actually getting powers, and then the twist at the end. Any one of those would have been satisfying development for the character for an issue. So to get all 3, I thought was really cool. Because again, I mean, the Red Bee is essentially a spin on Ant-Man, except with bees instead of...
Right, Ant-Man. Exactly. And, you know, you take this character, and this is an excellent example in my mind of the old statement, there are no bad characters, there are only bad writers.
Yeah.
Because you take this character, and what Palmiotti and Gray do with this character in this issue, this could have gone in 1,000 different ways that were bad. And, you know, they made this very good, which just makes me all the more frustrated when I see a character that I know is a good character that is written in a feeble fashion. Case in point, think back 10 minutes when we were talking about Iron Man.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, you know, you can take a good writer and take the characters, certainly the characters in the Freedom Fighters, they're not even C-list characters. I mean, they're like Q-list characters, you know, when you got the Red Bee and Phantom Lady and Black Condor and the Human Bomb and, you know, these characters, you know, it's like, wow, these are not the frontline characters in the DC universe, but I sure enjoyed them quite a lot and thought that they have the potential of being frontline characters if only people would read how they're being written by Palmiotti and Gray, which unfortunately I think is going to be a hard sell, because this is something that I think certainly will fall below a lot of people's radars, this series, which is why I wanted to kind of give it an extra unscheduled push on this show.
I agree with that. I think a lot of people simply aren't going to read it. I think a lot of stores aren't going to necessarily have enough copies on the shelf for the quality, I think, of the book. This is something that I think this creative team could easily turn this into an ongoing series, and it just needs a couple of readers to actually pick it up, read it, and I think they'll enjoy it. So with the right marketing push and support from DC, this could be a very strong team book going forward.
I can't recommend it enough. You know, if somebody's got an extra couple of bucks in their pocket, came out a week or so ago, it should still be on the rack at a store. Pick this book up and take a look at it.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was fabulous.
Well, and there's hints and implications here that this group may be a key player in some of the upcoming events in DC. Whether that turns out to be the case or not, we'll find out. But they're certainly making it seem like that's a strong possibility.
And they do give you the explanation of why you didn't see them during the Amazon attacks event.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of glad I didn't see them in Amazon's attack. I was not that thrilled with Amazon's attack.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, the people who are writing Amazon's attack, it wouldn't have been good for these characters if they would have stuck them in there.
No, but
the way they handled that story in general.
If this creative team had done like a one-shot for that, it could have been interesting. I don't think it was needed, and I'm glad they didn't do it, but it wouldn't have had to suck.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one question I have for you is, did you notice the new costume for the Ray? If you look at the page opposite the ad for Chuck, you see a full shot of him. And it used to be that he had, like, a jacket.
Yeah, he didn't have that big flared collar like that.
No, the flared collar is new, and I don't really like.
Yeah, it's kind of goofy.
And now it's kind of a one-piece costume, more of a standard suit than he used to have.
I think my eye was probably drawn to Phantom Lady. Although some of these seem to be Black Condor's costume, now that you mention it. His costume maybe seems a little new, too. At least the face makeup that they've got on him.
It's an interesting team. I've always liked the Freedom Fighters, and it's cool to see them getting well used and, you know, repositioned in the DC Universe to where hopefully, I mean, again, based on this issue, I'd like to see this be ongoing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And in fact, I read the last Freedom Fighters 8-issue series that Palmiotti and Gray did with the art by Daniel Acuna, who's doing Flash now.
Right.
I liked it, but I didn't love it like this.
This, I think, was a much stronger start. I think part of it is they were positioned better because the other one was kind of coming out of the events after Infinite Crisis and things like that. So they had a few things they had to kind of clean up and take care of.
Right. They were tying up loose ends and positioning themselves to go, theoretically now, in the direction that they're going here.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if that was what they were doing, then bravo, because they set themselves up for, you know, what seems to be a very interesting run coming up here.
Yeah, definite thumbs up. People should go rush out and go buy this.
I will make a parallel to the Manhunter series by, I'm drawing a blank. Who is the writer on the Manhunter series?
Mark and Draco?
Yeah, and Draco, that's right. You know, it has that feel where you take a character that's, you know, characters in this case who are kind of C, D-list type of characters and just take them in a completely unexpected way in an extremely well-crafted story. And I'll make one final point here is that there are several very strong female characters on this team. And I think that this series is a very female-friendly series. So if any of the listeners out there are female or have a significant other, this would be a good book to have to put down in front of a female reader who wants to pick up and read some strong female characters. And Manhunter was certainly that way also.
Well, and again, the Red Bee, female character who could have easily been a very lame one, got some excellent character development this issue. I recorded my monthly discussion with Chris Marshall of the Collected Comics Library podcast about the August 2007 graphic novels and collected edition sales estimates. That episode will be released as soon as I get it edited. In addition, I have an article up on comic book resources going over the comic book and collected edition sales estimates for August. See the show notes for the direct link or go to www.cbr.cc and look for the article there.
John and I also appeared on episode number 28 of the Pop Cult Online podcast, where we talked about toys, classic toys, new toys, Sentai toys, also how to collect and where to collect, whether that be eBay, online stores, flea markets, you name it, we talked about it, all toys.
I also recorded an episode of Comic Timing with Ian Levenstein discussing the Superman Doomsday DVD.
We also recorded episode number one of our new Superfan Spotlight podcast, also available on the comic book page feed, where John and I talked to Jarrett Crippen, also known as the Diffuser, winner of the second season of the reality show Who Wants to Be a Superhero, and we concentrated on Jarrett's comic book collection, what comics he loves, how long he's collected, and things like that.
Hey, don't panic, it's just Bill. I'm here to tell you about the 43rd episode of Just Bill's Comic Book Joy Box. This week I'll discuss the television programs I've watched in the week, in addition to the comic books I've read this week, and I'll also go into some issues of Marvel Team-Up that are ready to go in the drawer box. So if you know where to find it, come check it out.
Join us next week when we discuss Metamorpho Year One, Number One from DC, Ms. Marvel Number 20 from Marvel, and Buffy the Vampire Slayer Number 7 from Dark Horse Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.